episode of Learned, the podcast, with your hosts, Dr. John Paul and Kevin Allred.
Hey, 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 everyone. Welcome to another episode of Learned. I am Dr. John Paul.
And I'm Kevin Allred.
Yay, we are back with another episode for your listening pleasure. So we are recording a little bit earlier this week. We all kind of have things going, a lot of stuff going on this week. So we're trying to make sure we get you a good episode prior to us getting super busy. But so far, it's weird to ask you, how's your week been? Because we're recording early. But
it's like the week's just about to start. Well,
to start, yeah. But how was this past week? We'll start there. How was this past week?
It's been really shitty weather all week in New York. So I'm okay. Like, when the sun doesn't come out for so long, I just kind of get bleh.
Is it cold at least?
It's not really cold. It's like middle of the, it's like 50s.
Okay.
60s. I don't know. That might be cold for California folks.
yes, 50. Anything 50 around here in Cali is cold.
It's not too terribly cold, but it's like been raining off and on and just overcast. And then the sun will come out for like 45 minutes and then go away again. And so it just feels a little manic, maybe, like my life. So like my brain.
Listen, like everybody's brain, honey. Yeah, it's kind of the same. It's been interesting. Our weather has been up and down here. So, this past week, it was warm when I got back, and then all of a sudden it was kind of chilly on Thursday. And then now it's back to being warm, and then tomorrow it's supposed to rain. So our weather is kind of all over the park too, but all over the place too, but I definitely feel it. Anything interesting happened this week?
Not really, not personally.
Okay.
I know what we're going to talk about, some stuff that happened this week.
Yeah.
Not a lot nothing of them personally. Mess. I've just been kind of, you know, moving along. Heavy breathing, deep breathing, getting ready for my book, which is now like only a month and a week, 5 weeks away or so. So I'm just like,
yes, girl. Gonna be on this best. Yes, you getting ready for this bestsellers list, honey.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yes. Girl, we don't speak that into existence. See, yeah. Look, so Solange told us, that's what I wanted to get into. We're going to open up the top of our show today, talking a little bit about Solange. And I know that this is old news, but I listened to her album again recently. And it's just, there was a part, you know, that part where she says, do nothing without intention. Do everything with intention. I don't know why that randomly this week just spoke to me differently. Like it just... It really spoke to me differently. And so I'm like, we need to manifest the things that we want to see happen. And one of the things I am going to manifest is that book is going to be on that list of like, Beyonce is going to know about it and everybody else around her is going to know about it. So we're going to get you on that list.
Yeah, I don't care about the like formal. I mean, of course, it's nice when you get that. Mm-hmm. But if she knew about it, if she heard about it, that would be enough for me. Like, if people like it, I don't need to be... I mean, of course, I'd love a nice paycheck selling a million copies.
Wouldn't we all?
Whatever. But, yeah, just as long as people enjoy it, I think.
Yeah, they hearing will. From, they will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually just got the notification that it's going to be shipping, and Amazon let me know. Yeah, Amazon lets you know when you put it into your bag and stuff. Okay. That ultimately it'll be shipping soon. So I'm really excited for you. So, yeah, kind of the same. My week, I spent a lot of the week traveling, and I'm going to get in. But I have maybe, I would say, two or three petty peeves this week or things that, you know, bother me for the playground. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show. But for the most part, this week has been pretty good. Definitely trying to do all I can to rest and get better. I don't know what's going on. And I've heard several other people talk about it. I don't know if it's the weather or I don't know if it's just kind of climate change, because we all know climate change doesn't really exist. Mm. But I just can't get over like the sniffles. Like, I've been coughing and sneezing and things and been trying to take every medicine under the sun. So if any of our listeners have great recommendations as to how we can get over the sniffles, please let me know. But I am definitely trying to get over the sniffles, and it is driving me nuts. So
I always do, well, not for allergies, but if it's like a cold, I always do raw garlic.
Okay.
And that, like, kicks everything out of your body. It also hurts after a well, you can do it different ways. I, in the past, I've just, like, chewed a clove of raw garlic. Will get you. Or, like, grate raw garlic into a tea or put it in a smoothie and it's not as noticeable. But, yeah, I find raw garlic helps. If it's allergies, it's probably not going to help the same way, though. But
okay. Yeah. I'm feeling better now. But, like I said, these last few weeks I've been on this wave of, like, okay, like, it's I would like to be able to breathe and live my life the way I want to live my life without allergies and everything else. But, yeah, we all know how climate changes. So it's probably a big piece of it. But other than that, I'm doing okay. All right, so we are going to get into the meat of the show this week. For our syllabus today, we are going to be talking about problematic fandoms and ultimately all of the things that come with that. So kind of asking you off the top, did you catch the Billboard Awards before we get into talking about the meat?
Right, we have to talk about the problematic artist first who starts the... I didn't watch it right. I wasn't home when it started. She opened the show. We're talking about, you know, Miss Taylor Mayonnaise Swift or whatever.
Girl, be careful. Don't hurt him.
Yeah. So she starts off the show. I didn't. I checked my Twitter and someone was like, "Ooh, I can't wait to hear what you think about Taylor's drumline." And I was like, "What? Who?" I didn't even realize she was opening the show. I actually had forgotten that. Award show was even on that night, I think it was Wednesday or Tuesday, I don't know. So I
quit. It had to be Wednesday because I was just getting in from the airport.
So I pulled up a quick YouTube. It had already, you know, been put on YouTube. I think this is like an hour after the show started. And just immediately, of course, you hear the whistle. Which is exactly the same. I mean, these are all common things that can be incorporated into a performance, but coming just a couple weeks, obviously a year after Beachella, Coachella, but only a couple weeks after Homecoming comes out, hear the same exact whistle, you see a marching band come in.
Right.
And then she comes out and hits the exact same pose.
Tries to hit.
Yeah, we gotta put that in there. Tries to hit that exact same pose. And it was just so... I mean, I think I dropped my phone. I was like, what? No. Who is behind this? Who greenlit this? Who came up with this concept? It's just so much... such a blatant ripoff. I have a whole thing. You all know if you've listened to me talk for more than 30 seconds, I probably will say something about how I dislike Taylor Swift. Yeah. I mean, I don't, and I'm not even talking about her as a person. Well, this is one thing we can get into when we talk about fans, but like you can't talk about the art or the like the actual product music that they're selling without the fans thinking you're talking about the person themselves. Like, so right. I don't know Miss Taylor Swift. She could be, a perfectly lovely human being, though I've heard stories from people who have experienced her in person that say otherwise, that I will not share with anyone. But she, you know, it's not about that. It's just about how, and I don't think she's unaware of it. Like, that's what people can claim. Like, oh, well, she had this, she was planning this for however long. Well, you're not unaware of what else is going on around you. This isn't even getting into the weird Mary Poppins ending of the rest of the performance. And it also felt very derivative of Kacey Musgraves and her pastel rainbowy gay pride thing. Anyway, so it was like a pastiche of all these different things, but obviously a nod to Beyonce. And it wasn't like an homage to Beyonce. That would be one thing. You can do that. An artist could do that and like kind of show their deference and inspiration to Beyonce. That's what wasn't what it was. It wasn't just a coincidence in like we both are really into marching bands right now. It was definitely an intentional ripoff. And I mean, I don't even know what the right word is. I saw some people describe it as a mockery of Beyonce online, which I thought was a really good way to talk about it, because I do think she's intentionally doing these, incorporating racist dog whistles into her music.
Racist dog whistles, Lord Jesus.
Like, ever since the Kanye West thing, she's incorporated, she's banked on a white racial identity while never really denouncing her kind of white supremacist fan base. Yeah. She kind of came out as a Democrat last year or 2 years ago, and everyone was like, see, she's great. She donated a bunch of money to some LGBT organization. Okay, that's cool. But there's still like this large percentage of her persona that relies on a white supremacist understanding, I think. Like,
yeah,
with Kanye, it was the white woman in peril. Because she could have dealt with that a number of different ways. Then you go through the Kanye thing actually extends until, what year was it when Kim Kardashian called her out and the snake thing started? And
2016, 2017.
So, like, again, still recently. And then, let's not forget, Beyonce was involved in that original thing too, not willingly. It was just that Kanye got up to interrupt Taylor because he said Beyonce should have won this award. And she's kind of, you know, aghast at this whole thing happening. And then she gives her speech to Taylor afterwards. Taylor doesn't thank her at all. She just kind of does her little merry little thing. And so there's this weird interplay. Kanye's gone off a deep end in the time since that's happened.
Oh, poor man.
There's a weird interplay between those three since that moment, just like culturally. And I think Taylor has fed into it. Well, while the other two don't, they kind of like have moved on from that moment immediately after it happened.
Right.
Or maybe Kanye took a little while longer. Beyonce certainly has never referenced that moment kind of in anything again. But Taylor has continued to replay that moment where she's felt unfairly accosted because of Beyonce. I think she harbors some kind of resentment towards Beyonce, and she's used a white racial identity to, and not a super talented one either. Like, let me just be honest. Like, she's not innovative in the music she makes like Beyonce is.
I'm going to jump in and say, please. I think that you bring up a really good point, because someone had made mention, I saw someone on Twitter make a comment that you could tell. So like when thinking about, and we're going to get into, we're going to move away from just want to let the listeners know that this will not be a whole entire podcast where we are basically dragging Taylor Swift to filth. We are basically kind of opening the podcast with letting folks know, like, yeah, we saw it. We are aware of it. A lot of folks have added us. A lot of people have asked us what our thoughts are, and we're like trying to give you a quick synopsis of like where our heads are at with all of it before we move into the larger conversation. But a big piece that I had saw, and I feel like people are right, you could definitely tell, like, and this is not even just for Taylor, this is for a lot of the performances I watched at, you know, the BBMAs, and then a lot of performances I've seen since watching, you know, Beyonce's Homecoming. You can tell that 8 to 9 months went into the performance, and we've said that in the past, the past podcast. With this in particular performance, you could tell that it was in a way a mockery of what Beyonce had done, or with a lot of artists like Beyonce have done in the past. Yes, Beyonce is not the only one to ever use a marching band in her performance. However, Beyonce was very intentional about why she used a marching band in her performance. And so watching even the quick 5 seconds that I had watched of Taylor's performance, you could see, just watching the guys coming out with the drums, that it was just them hitting a drum. There were folks who weren't marching on beat. You could tell that during the performance that it was a performance that was thrown together in a good 2 to 3 week fashion after Beyonce had done what she had done back in April. And so that's where my frustration kind of came with, and where this conversation kind of came from, is this idea that there are a lot of fans who are like, well, who are we to critique Taylor for trying to say that Taylor's copying Beyonce? In a lot of ways, yes, because you can just tell in the performance that the energy and the love and the tenacity that, you know, a lot of artists, or specifically Beyonce, had for what she put out as a product is not what Taylor did. where the gall was for me in all of this, and this is, again, what kind of led me to say, hey, we need to do a podcast around this, was when she was like, I'm going to release the footage of us performing and practicing this and trying, you know, we're going to, I've never done this before. And it's like, girl, like, you, nothing you are doing is original at this point. Like, if you were to say, oh, this performance, you know, was something I had dreamed up, you know, 2-3 years ago, and I really wanted people to see how fun and lovely I was because I felt like with the reputation, everybody got a really bad side to Taylor. So then I would have sat back and said, okay, girl, I see you thinking, like, I see you trying to clean up your act and your vision and your, you know, whatever you want people to know about you. But no, it was none of that. It was nothing about it was strategic. And that's what made me very upset when I was watching it. I was like, okay, girl. And to be upset more, and again, I'll give the mic back to you, but to be upset more that I feel like you get so many Black artists who, like Beyonce, put 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years into their performances and their art and the work that they do. And yes, people will laud it and celebrate it and love it. And then you'll have a white star, specifically a white star, come along and will take pieces of it and say, oh, I thought of this before so-and-so did it. And you're going, no, you didn't. Like, I could clearly tell you stole that, you know? So it's just, it's frustrating. It's extremely frustrating.
And it's not, this isn't like a one-off for her either. This is a long-running thing where she takes Beyonce's, I think just last time I was saying this or something, because her fans, speaking of the fan base, came after me because I said something about how she's takes Beyonce's PR strategies. It's not even just the music and the visuals or the art, but she does the whole, like, okay, now I'm going to be private. Like, Beyonce in 2013 gives us a documentary and says, okay, I'm drawing these lines now where I'm going to be more of a private person and I'm not going to do interviews. And like a couple years later with the reputation thing, Taylor's like, I'm not going to do interviews anymore. You're just going to be able to access me through my songs, my work.
Right.
Then she starts writing in letters to magazines like Beyonce had done for the Vogue cover. Like, and Beyonce does it on this other level where it's a significant power move to be on the September issue of Vogue and not give them an interview. Like, that's a different level than just Marie Claire or Elle magazine, right, or Teen 17 or whatever thing. And so she does all of those things, but she lets enough like time go in between them that they're not really that people don't really focus on how it's exactly Beyonce's strategy, just a 2-year lag. But then she did, you know, she stole those images from Formation for her video, or right, looked so close to her video to Formation from her video, which I can't even remember. Very the much song. So. Was that? Yeah.
Look what you made me do.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's even poking fun there with the title, like mockery of the title. Look what you made me do. Like, look, I'm copying. Look what you made me do. Like, I don't know. It's just very, it feels very pointed towards Black women generally. And she's used Black women in videos before in that kind of Miley Cyrus way where they're like, she's dancing through the legs of a Black woman or something like that.
Right.
In Shake It Off, I think.
It was.
And now Homecoming comes out and she's not even waiting 2 weeks. And people are like, oh, she's, Taylor had a marching band in her video 10 years ago. Okay, that's true, I guess. I haven't seen these videos.
But did Destiny's Child.
Right, but a marching band in the context of an HBCU homecoming is so much different than just, you know, Taylor Swift with a flute and a whatever marching down the street.
And an offbeat whistle.
And an offbeat whistle is totally different than just your run-of-the-mill high school marching band. Like, there's very different experiences that come with each of them invoking a marching band. And she's kind of, I don't know, it even feels vindictive to me because it's almost like, oh, Beyonce did this very Black version as if people, it's only for Black people. It's almost like the, oh, well, that wasn't for us. So Taylor's going to come out and give the version that's for everyone because that's she's real, including everyone, which isn't true anyway. Beyonce did have white dancers in her whole thing. She did have, she always has a diverse, I think the only video is Formation where she only had Black women dancers. Mm-hmm. she usually has like one or two white dancers as well. But it's like, we talked about that before, about how she gives you, she changes who's like at the center and who's on the margin. So white people are still there. It's just like, you have to do different work. You have to learn about it to enter it in a different way. Taylor's almost like rejecting that and being like, Taylor's like the Fox News version of anything that happens culturally, because she's like, oh, they won't let white people enjoy Lemonade or Formation or Homecoming. So here's me, Taylor. I'm going to make the version that everyone can enjoy. But the funny thing is, she plays herself, because it's so bland and boring. And
right.
And then she's got, don't even get me started, because then she's got Todrick Hall that comes out and defends her at every moment. It's just like,
right. And I feel like that's a great segue into kind of what we are talking about in terms of like problematic fandoms. And I had written an article. I had mentioned, so I've been working on a manuscript that I had to put together for something I've been working on. And I had to make mention of that. Specifically, I was talking about what it is, and this has nothing to do with it, but has everything to do with it. I was talking about, black artists, specifically black queer artists, why it seems like they ultimately will side with whiteness other than their blackness in relation when things kind of happen around race, why we never hear certain black artists. And I'll say this very openly. RuPaul has been critiqued about it. Todrick has been critiqued about it. The gentleman who is on the new Netflix show, what is it? The Queer Eye, the Black Eye.
Oh, Karamo.
Karamo, yeah. So I made mention about that, and I specifically had made note about when everything happened with Look What You Made Me Do, how Todrick was very quick to kind of swoop in and really protect Taylor and say, you need to give her a chance. This shouldn't be a black versus white thing. And he even recently did it again. You know, he went and people are asking, like, why is Todrick so quick to go up for Taylor, even though she is blatantly doing things that in a lot of ways could come across as anti-black. And so that made me start thinking about kind of all of the things. Specifically, it's not even just Todrick. There are a lot of fans that, you know, are connected to the Taylor Swift group or circle or whatever you want to call it. And I have to ask the question, why is it that, you know, and there was a whole long ass thread about it on Twitter about Taylor Swift fans being racist. But I think about that a lot. Like, why is it that so many different fandoms, the first thing they swoop to is racism? Or why is it the first thing that they swoop to is wanting to cut down black people? And it's not even just Taylor Swift's camp that I see it in. I see it in the RuPaul's Drag Race camp. I see it when black queens specifically will win a challenge and send a white queen home. You will get black, you know, you will get so many fans of said white queens going up against the black queens. You will see on Facebook, like I had even said, I think that there needs to be a real, and I know you don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race like that, but I do. One of the things I had brought up was about how folks are so quick to critique and make fun of Silky Ganache. It was just a black queen who is, I like to say, is of stature, she's of size, and I find people saying racist or fatphobic or things about her personality, and I have to question, are people saying those things genuinely because they don't like Silky, because Silky's personality is just quote-unquote annoying, or are they saying that because she's a larger black queen? And so I think about this a lot. I don't know if Taylor Swift was doing this to any other person. Say, for instance, I didn't hear all of this shit happening when there was the Taylor versus Katy Perry beef, right? It was very, that was a time when I heard people say, Katy this, Taylor that, but it was always kind of very, very, it was very small. That's the word I want to use, was very small in my mind. But as soon as it became about Taylor Swift mocking Beyonce, there were all these racist things that people were saying, and I'm going, why? So, you know, why is it that fandoms are this way? And so that was kind of where my mind was, and I just wanted to get your thoughts about it. Like, why are so many fandoms extremely problematic? And that's kind of where I'm like sitting, what I'm like sitting with. You know?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've wondered about this a lot, too. At one point, I was trying to write. I couldn't really get my head or wrap my head around the, like, thesis piece of it. But as someone who's been attacked by different. I mean, different.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing.
But by different fan groups or stan groups, but especially having Taylor Swift fans come at me in a number of times, and then also being attacked by like right wing Fox News people and like Donald Trump supporters and that kind of political group of people. I saw them do this exact same tactics in my mentions, mm-hmm. Where it's like you could even take two of their comments and they'd be the exact same thing. You wouldn't know if it was actually in response to something I'd said politically about Trump or something I'd said about Taylor Swift. And it was so weird because that's when I've always been, since that thing happened at the VMAs, I've always been interested in analyzing Taylor Swift's moves in that way and thinking about how what she did in that moment has continued to play out through her career and how she's actually chosen to use it as a marketing strategy when she could have gone a different way.
Right.
And I think that rubs off on, I don't know. Well, do you think, cause a lot of them do it, but do you think the way the artist reacts to it rubs off on the group of people? Like does the Beehive say, like, because Beyonce obviously says nothing about any of this,
right.
And kind of the Beehive goes after people. I'm not actually posting pictures of bees on Kid Rock's Instagram, but I know the rest of the Beehive still is to this day from like 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and other people as well. So, but I don't know if I see as much ugly stuff come from that group of fans. I don't know, but it's also evolving. And I think Beyonce was the first person in a social media age to have a fan base this way. And every kind of group of stans or whatever you want to call it is in its own way a recreation of the Beehive.
Mm-hmm.
Another derivative recreation of the Beehive. Again, another way that people are using or wittingly or unwittingly kind of redoing what Beyonce had done.
I'm gonna challenge you. Actually gonna say I don't think it's necessarily start. I don't think it started with Beyonce. You know who I think it started with, and I could be 100% off in left field, but I definitely think it started with Lady Gaga. I think it started with Gaga. I think it started with Gaga, and I would say probably around maybe 2009, 2010 with her whole monster phase, really? Where she was like my little monsters and things, because Beyonce had already, okay, so I will say this, I was always a Bee fan. I was always in the Beehive, but I don't know if this whole like get 'em mentality started with Beyonce. I think because I had even seen, you know, when social media, when Twitter and all of that became kind of a thing, I would see people saying and posting things if folks said anything left about Lady Gaga. And that's why I never did. I was like, I don't want her fans coming after me. And that was also a big part of why I never went to any of her concerts, because I didn't like her fans. Yeah. I said her fans are mean. And I never wanted to associate myself with her fan base. I still like Lady Gaga a lot, actually. I think she's a very talented woman. But I just find that her not Poker Face, but the album that came after that, the Put Your Paws Up, Born This Way. Yeah, the Born This Way era of her music is when I took a back seat and was like, okay, y'all are crazy.
No, that that
I had to take a back seat.
That could be true. I think Beyonce like reinvented the like fan club, like what it means.
Okay.
Because when I was, you know, I love Janet Jackson. You could like join the Janet Jackson fan club in the 80s or 90s and like send a self-addressed stamped envelope to wherever. And like different artists had those things. But you weren't interacting necessarily with other fans. And again, we didn't have social media. So that changes things. But I think Beyonce took that model. And because when is the first time people start using Beehive as a way to name the fan club or whatever. Do you know?
I think it was probably around 2013. I think after the Beyonce drop. No, because I don't think anybody really referred to themselves as like a Beehive stan or fan until that album really dropped. And again, I could be 100% wrong.
I should know but some things like this, but I...
And we should know, right? We should know when the dates and the times and exact locations and when it should be used. We should know that. But I think that it really didn't become a thing until that album dropped. However, I feel like a lot of what we're talking about too, like the problematic fandoms, it started, you know, I saw it kick up with Nicki. I saw when Nicki started to get popular, her fandom became really mean and people saying, I don't want to associate myself with Nicki Minaj fandom because, you know, her fans are not people. They're not me and I'm not them. I saw a lot of it kind of take place too, even around Mariah. Like I like Mariah Carey and I'm not a huge fan. I still feel like there's a lot to be dissected there about her and what she stands for. And I know a lot of people do love her, but I also feel like her fans are mean. And I just don't understand why. So Britney fans, some of them can be mean too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's just...
I feel like I'm talking out my ass, but yeah.
No, no, I'm just reading... I'm trying to trace right now to find the first time people used Beehive as a way to, like, talk about the fans. Because she had online forums and things earlier than that. I guess that's neither here nor there. But the Beehive was forming in the early... Now... just like the way, why are, maybe people are just assholes in general.
Yeah. And I think that's a big part, you know, and maybe I see this article that came out in 2016 about Inside the Beehive, and that article you can find on The Ringer. But I feel like, you know, you bring up a really good point that, you know, and
I guess the question is, when did it become about... more about attacking other people than it did about, like, enjoying the shared thing. The artist and, like, enjoying talking with... Because I never hear about these stan bases until they're attacking people. I don't see... I mean, maybe they have lovely little conversations about how much they love the new... You know, whatever. I know when Beyonce has something new, you can always see people tweeting and loving it and whatever. And then, of course, the people come out from the other places to hate on it. But, like, I don't go, except Taylor Swift. I don't go out just specifically to hate on something. I'm giving some kind of critical analysis of it still. I mean, or I will tweet something that's just like, I just don't like that song, sorry. But it's not personal about that artist. It's not me, you know, it's like these people act like you walked up and slapped the person in the face and should be put in jail. They at the artist, the managers, the FBI, the police, come get this person, like what they did. They're implying that Taylor Swift is a racist. That's libel. They're like, I'm like, whoa, my good Lord. What a...
It's just a lot for so little. And I say that all the time. A lot of this is a lot for so little, especially because you don't know these people personally. And it's like, right. You do, like, I could see, like, so for instance, right. Like I've been in situations where, and I'm going to name drop and you all can judge me for it. But like, I've been in situations where I have had people say mean things about, say for instance, and I've told her, so she already knows, where someone will say something terrible about Francesca Ramsey, and I will stop the conversation because I'm like, okay, what we're not going to do is have you here in this space talk about my friend, right? Like, same thing for you. Like, and I'm not saying this has happened, but if I'm in a conversation and your name was to come up, I would go to the ends of the earth to be like, okay, what we're not going to do on this time is go after my friend. Like, these are all people that I know personally and I do work with and yada, 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 right? So when people come after Beyonce, I usually will just kind of shrug my shoulders and go, well, that's your opinion. Have a nice day. Like, I don't know. And so, and even when people do say mean things, like, I don't know I don't have 10, 15, 20 minutes to go to Kid Rock's page or to go to Taylor Swift's page and post a whole bunch of bees. Like, I just don't. And I don't even know, like, I guess for me, like, one of the things that I'm wondering is, like, I don't ever remember Michael Jackson fans ever going after Prince like that, you know? Like, I don't ever remember hearing Michael Jackson fans going to a Prince concert and, like, throwing tomatoes. Like, I just, these are the things that, like, I'm wondering, like, I guess my real question becomes, like, and we don't have to have a definitive answer, but I'm thinking about, like, where did the problematic fandom start from? Because in the past, I never heard about, same thing, like, I never heard about Patti LaBelle fans going to an Aretha concert.
And, well, like, they would have their own, like, shade back and forth to each other.
And they did.
And fans would, but I mean? it was, even when it was, like, shady, it was kind of,
It was still nice.
Yeah, it was, like, I don't know, maybe people won't get that, but, like, it was definitely shady and rude, but not mean.
And, I mean, so, like, okay, so a great example of this, right? Like, so before Aretha Franklin died, she sends that fax over to Dionne Warwick, and it was this whole conversation of, like, I don't fuck with you, you don't need to fuck with me, and we're cool. Like, that to me is, that's inter-camp beef, right? Yeah. Something maybe Dionne Warwick did to Aretha Franklin or someone in Aretha Franklin's camp made Aretha Franklin respond to the way that she did. But, like, I don't understand or comprehend the need for a fan to be mean. Case in point, one of the bigger things that came up for me is, like, I had to go into my Twitter and I had to literally mute everything I was seeing about Game of Thrones because it was like, I was tired of seeing it because I don't watch the show. But two, it was like, I felt like if I would have commented or said anything about not liking Game of Thrones, everybody would have been in my mentions. You're a hater. Fuck you. You're awful. And I'm like, it's just a stupid show.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, it's just a show. Like, why are we doing this? I love Walking Dead, but I would never go into someone's mentions when they say, oh, fuck Walking Dead. It's awful. Oh, fuck you. Rick is life. Like, why would I do that? I don't comprehend it. Like, it really bugs me that there are so many fandoms out there that where people are just downright mean to one another for no reason. But
yeah.
I don't know. It's just a thought.
Well, and it's going looking for it. Like, they're looking for a fight too. Everyone's looking for a fight because I don't know how they found me the other day because I was using asterisks all over in the name so that they couldn't just search Taylor Swift and find my tweet. Yeah. And I wasn't even anything. I don't even remember. I think it was after this whole thing started. Or the BBMA thing, and I don't know how they find the tweets, because, like, are they searching it with every combination of asterisks? Because
no, I think that there's a bot out there with your, and I don't say this to make you scared, to make you or anybody on the interwebs nervous, but I think that there are bots, and I think that there are people who have your tweets marked.
Oh, right.
And so anytime you say or do anything, especially around that woman, they're gonna come after you. You know,
it's like, so, oh, you that's must what be I think. So, you're so obsessed, like, you say you're a Beyonce fan, but you talk about Taylor all the time. Like, okay, first of all, it's not a competition. Nobody has to be in competition with each other. Or then they go for the, what kills me is when they go for the, like, it's not really gaslighting. It's, or maybe it kind of is, where they're like, oh, you say you're a feminist, but you're saying something mean about a woman, or you're pitting two women against each other. Mm-hmm. They go for all these, like, social justice languagey things, but they're definitely not, you know, saying them from a place of good faith, but they're just using them because they know that that's, like, really bad right now. So we're in a moment where if you get called out for saying something rude about women, especially if you, like, claim to be a feminist, like, that's not what feminism means, first of all, but so they go for all of those things. They go for, It's weird. And the political people do it as well. They're like, oh, well, you know, it's your fault. I've seen some Taylor Swift fans tell me it's my fault that Trump won because I'm too, I'm like, wait, are we crossing over now? What are we talking about? Who are you defending here, Donald Trump or Taylor Swift? Because a lot of the times it, like, creates, I do think there's something about, and I don't know how to make a connection between the artist and their group of fans. Like, maybe they're all acting in really rude ways because of social media, but I do think there's a racist piece that trickles through what Taylor is putting out as her work that people even unwittingly are taking in, and they might be like, no, of course I'm not racist, but like the messages they're getting from her work are subtly
rooted in
the fact that she has this resentment against black there's a resentment against black women that permeates her music. I'm not even gonna say particularly Beyonce, because I think it's bigger than the individual people, but I think she has a resentment as a white woman who thinks she deserves more than she gets, even though she gets a lot. And it kind of comes out through this mockery of Beyonce in some ways, or the victim thing she plays with Kanye, or these different moments where like, as a white woman, I should be getting more credit than I am, and no one's respecting me, and da-da-da-da-da. And I think that trickles down into her fan base. I don't know how it works. I mean, I've obviously spent a lot more time paying attention to and analyzing some artists over others. Like, I don't know how it works with Ariana Grande, but I know her fans have been going.
Her fans are awful too.
And it's usually against acclaim, and with Taylor, when they become racist when there's a claim of Taylor Swift's being racist or something. And so they're like proving their own case, because I know people have been talking about Ariana Grande and cultural appropriation, and that's when they come back being racist more than ever. I'm like, okay, well, you're proving the critics' case for them, I guess. I don't know. It started with, and Ariana went off about like bloggers, and Lizzo was mad about critics too.
And that's another thing I was gonna make a comment about too. I was gonna make a comment about this idea that I think when you start talking about, and I say fandoms very, very loosely, I say very, you know, I want to make it clear that I don't have a problem with someone being a part of a fandom. And I say, I use fandom because that's a word that I learned, you know, following like the Avengers and all the other things that I follow. I don't have a problem with someone saying I live, eat, breathe, sleep for Ariana Grande per se. That will never be me. I don't, in this world, I don't understand even to this day how her mumbling got her as far as it has. But, you know, get your coin where you can get it how you live it. You know, we're all here trying to get, you know, enough to survive. However, what I will say, though, is I think that there becomes a fine line between you saying, I am going to critique the person's work. And that's the thing I have a hard time with when I see or I hear people tweet you and say that you're being anti-woman or you're being sexist. We all are creatives in our own right, right? So when you get in the entertainment industry, what is entertainment? It means that we are putting something out that we find to be creative. Will the world respond to it? Maybe. Will the world love it? Possibly. Will the world hate it? Well, there's a likely chance, more than not, that someone's going to hate something you put out. But I think for both of us, right? You write, I write, we all kind of do different things in our own lane. I think there needs to be a larger conversation about us needing to stop convoluting this idea that by critiquing someone else's work that we are ultimately being sexist or we're being racist or whatever, right? You can say you don't like Beyonce's HBCU performance or Homecoming because you don't understand it. That is fine. Where the problem starts to come in for me is when you start naming things that are highly anti-black or naming things that are blatantly racist. And I see this. It's not even just with Taylor Swift's people. Again, I see this across every single fandom that I follow or that I like. And that is a big reason why I don't follow Game of Thrones. Because there have been times I've seen people say and do things that are, in my mind, extremely anti-black or extremely racist. And I just don't understand, again, and I'll keep saying this until I'm probably blue in the face, I don't understand how the two meet. Like, I just don't. And again, a lot of us are racist and don't know it. A lot of people, you know, a lot of us walk around this world being sexist, being racist, being transphobic and not really knowing it. But there comes a time where I sometimes sit down and I will go through Twitter and I'll scroll, you know, Beyonce's hashtag, or I'll scroll the Taylor Swift hashtag, or I'll scroll the Ariana Grande hashtag. And I'll see some fans say some things and I'm going, are you kidding me? Like, why do we even have to go there? Like, why do we have to take it there to this really low dirty, mean place when all you could simply say, like, I don't like Igloo Azalea. I don't like Iggy Azalea. And I probably never will. Does she make some songs that are cute to me? Sure. This little video that she just recently put out is cute, right? Can I also name that she also appropriates black people and that she's also problematic in a lot of ways? I can also do that too. But by no means should I go around and call her the B word or call her the C word. Or like I said, I just don't get as an artist or as someone who I don't say as an artist. I don't, as someone who is a creative or someone who is constantly trying to create, I don't understand the folks who, I would never want people who like Dr. John Paul to go after someone else in that way. Like, I would genuinely say, please don't be my fan if you're going to be that nasty to someone else, you know? Like, I just, don't follow me, don't follow my work if you're going to be that way to other people. So, I don't know. It just, it really, really burns me. It really, really burns me. Yeah.
Yeah, and just being unwilling to, like you said, I don't care who anyone likes or, you know, your favorite pop star is or whatever, but like the unwillingness to even think about the idea of, say, cultural appropriation in Ariana Grande's music. She's actually a good example because there are some critiques of her that I totally agree with, and some, remember like a little bit ago when that critique came out, it was before Into was done, and it was like saying she was transphobic, and it just kind of went, it was for her video that kind of did Mean Girls and all those 80s movies.
Oh, or 90s I remember movies, that, yeah.
And it was like so overboard, and I was like, you know, it's, but I read something like that. So my process is I read something like that and I think, okay, maybe I wasn't zeroing in on these things because I'm not trans, so I don't think about that, da 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 da. So let me just, like, think about it from an objective point of view. Could this be read this way? Could we take it this way? And, like, you can still say, no, that was overboard, which I did with that article. Right. But there's some where you're like, okay, people are saying that this is cultural appropriation. I kind of don't agree, or I think it might be something different, but I see where they're coming from. So let me think about it some more. Or I can, or yes, I totally agree that it's this, da 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 da. But these people, before even reading an article, or it's just that nobody wants to think critically about anything or anyone.
Nobody reads, honey.
Nobody reads.
Nobody reads.
That's where it gets to me the most. Like, just, we can come up, this was always my thing with grading my students too. I'm like, you can write a paper, they're like, you can't take Kevin's class because you'll get an F if you, you know, like Donald Trump. I'm like, that's not true. You can write a paper to me and tell me about what a wonderful person he is and why he's the best president in the world, but you have to back it up with sources and you have to make a logical argument. Like, that's the point. You have to think critically about it. And if you do those things, I will write in the margins how I disagree with every little thing you are saying and how check out this source and see about this. But at the end of the paper, you'll still get an A because you wrote an argument that follows each other. But you cannot just say, he's great. Mm-hmm. Well, why? Well, shut up. It doesn't matter because you're not going to believe me anyway. Okay. So, like, that's the fundamental problem I have with all these people. And that's what they do. They don't read it. They don't think about it. They don't go back and watch Homecoming and be like, oh, wow, that really was super close to Beyonce's opening. So maybe there is some logic in what people are saying here. And I'm not even saying it's all intentional. It doesn't all have to be intentional. Ariana Grande doesn't have to intentionally be appropriating anything. But the fact that it might come out that way is something still to talk about. It doesn't even mean she's a bad person or that she can't do better next time or that she... whatever. It just means that we're analyzing a music video that everybody's watching. And it can help in some ways, maybe, get some people to think about an issue differently. I don't know. It's just, it's become so personal and so.
And I think that you've said a lot of great things this episode, not to say that you don't any other episode, but there have been a lot that you have said this episode and I was just like, you're spot on. And I think your comment about people not wanting to think critically, I think is a big reason. I think that's kind of where my mind is kind of with getting to this point, you know, when I've been asking this question, why are fandoms so awful? You know, I'm learning that I think that a lot of people can't seem to understand the importance of one of the greatest things about music or entertainment or film or whatever is this idea that we have to think critically about it, right? And that we all live different lives that where the work speaks differently to us. And so I understand that there are people, and that's the one thing, the one reason why you rarely ever hear me say anything about Taylor Swift. I understand that there are people in this world who Taylor Swift, their music speaks to them for whatever lived experience that they have, right? So I'm okay with that. However, as someone who is, again, a creative, I can still come back and say, that thing you like about Taylor is something she took from a black woman. Mm. And that for me is a problem because of the history behind, you know what I'm saying? So there becomes this need for people to think critically. And I think that that's been what's been driving me crazy is that I think everyone assumes that just because you like an artist, that everybody has to like an artist. And it's like, no, creative, a part of the creative process is creating stuff where other people can critique it. Yeah. That's literally all we ever do, whether we critique it for the good or we critique it for the bad. I always say, I don't like Taylor Swift because Taylor Swift is not for me. I truly believe that she is the Piper Chapman of the music industry. She just is. And I will continue to say that until the day that I hit the grave. I believe that she creates a lot of her own mess and then tries to play the, oh, woe is me, poor me, you know, tiny violin. But there are tons of artists who do it. Kim Kardashian does it. I feel like Kanye has done it to an extent. I feel like there are a lot of artists who create a mess and then go, oh, Chris Brown, another great one. You know, I think about Justin Bieber could have just shut up this week and yet he's created a mess for himself. So a lot of these artists, all they really need to do is be quiet. However, I still get to this place where I go, it is okay for an artist to be critiqued. There are performances that Beyonce has given and I've gone, ooh, girl, I love you, but I don't know. Like, I don't know where you were in your head with this performance. I don't know where you were with this choreography. I don't know why you picked this clothes select. Like, I can love her and critique her at the same time because, again, it's art. But what I don't, for me personally, I don't know or need to be mean to other people who critique her in the same fashion, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know? I'm not interested in mean critiques. I'm interested in, even when I'm like, and I don't think, even when I say things about Taylor Swift, I don't think I'm saying mean things. I think I'm just making cultural analysis about what's going on. I mean, I guess on Twitter, the default is to be kind of like eye roll emoji. Oh God, here she goes again. But even that's not mean compared to what these people are saying. Like,
child, like, yes.
What did they tell me the other day? I wrote something about Taylor Swift and they wrote, kill yourself, fatty. And I was like, oh,
see, yeah.
Ooh, okay. Like, cool.
Yeah. Like, oh, that escalated quickly.
I was like, that's kind of a copycat performance. Kill yourself, fatty. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And like that's their go-to. Like that's the minimum. And then it only gets worse from there.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. And that's the thing, like, you know, I guess, and I had this conversation today earlier at brunch. I sound so queer when I say it, but I was at brunch with some friends and we were talking about social media and how awful it's getting. And, you know, ultimately, a friend of mine was saying that her daughter is getting ready to be 16. And she was saying, I don't want my daughter on social media, you know, for this very reason. Like, I think it was her niece. Her niece is getting ready to turn 16. And she was saying, you know, I just don't want her on social media. And I do all that I can to keep her off of social media. And I think a big piece of it is, you know, a part of, you know, said, I wouldn't even say the dark corner of social media, because it's not a dark corner, but I think you speak to what a lot of people like myself worry about. Like, it's this idea that you critique. So, like, I mean, I make a comment, you know, about, you know, say, for instance, and again, I try to be really nice about what I say because I don't have a problem with her, but I can name that there are things that she has done and has said that are problematic. I make a comment about Nicki Minaj and then all her Nicki Minaj fans swoop into my mention and it's kill yourself. You're ugly. You're fat. You're stupid. You're this. And I'm going, it's not that deep. Like, it's really, really, really. And maybe that's because I, you know, maybe it's our age. Maybe it's our age. Maybe it's the generation we came up in where Michael Jackson fans weren't going to Prince concerts and ready to stab someone. Right. But I just, I don't understand it. You know, I think that that's a big piece of it. I think it's generational. I
can't imagine being saying those things or just even thinking them about someone who did it. Like, I remember in middle school, I liked one artist. My friends liked a different one. We still would, like, listen to the songs together, like, back and forth. I wouldn't be like, ah, kill yourself. Like,
right, yeah,
I can't believe you bought this.
A great example of that is when I was in math class. Chad, I'm dating myself. So let's talk about it real quick. So when you were in high school, did you have the folders with the plastic on the front where you could put the pictures and stuff in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, and I don't know if people still do that, but I know for me when I was in high school, middle school and high school, we did that. I can remember specifically, this is when I was actually starting to come into my gay phase. I was an extremely huge fan of NSYNC. And I used to love NSYNC. And so each day, it always jumped between three people. I was in love with NSYNC. I was in love with Aaliyah. And I was in love with Britney Spears. And so each day, I would have different... I would on the weekend, I would make different pictures and things that I'd want to put on my folder for the week. And so I would change them out. And so on some days, I would have, you know, maybe Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'd have NSYNC. And on Tuesday, I'd have Aaliyah. And then on Thursday, I'd have Britney. That's how the week would probably go. But I say all of that to say I sat next to a girl who was the same way about Backstreet Boys, except with Backstreet Boys, like, every day for her was Backstreet Boys. She would wear the BSB shirts. She would listen to the BSB album in her Walkman. Like, she just was the biggest BSB fan. And so we would go back and forth, you know, jokingly about why NSYNC was better than Backstreet or why Backstreet was better than NSYNC or whatever. But I couldn't fathom sitting in math class being like, I don't know what her name is. We'll call her Natalie. Natalie, like, kill yourself because you don't like NSYNC. Like, why would I do that? Why?
Yeah, I don't.
You know?
And I wonder, maybe these people wouldn't act like that in person to other people, but... I don't know.
Shit. I'm all about keep that same energy. And I say this very wholeheartedly. If I ever catch somebody online who sends me a tweet saying I need to kill myself and we see each other in public, it's someone's going to jail.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. So I'm just letting you know, like, I am all, especially in this year of our Lord 2019, I'm all about keeping the same energy. Yeah. So don't come over here with that. I'm telling you right off the cusp that it will not go well for you if we ever bump into each other. But yeah, it's just, it's sad. And I guess that's kind of like my, what's the word I want to use? I guess it's a public service. This in particular podcast this week is more of a public service announcement about, like, you don't have to be mean to people because they don't like the same thing you do. You know, not every artist is for you. And if it's not, that's fine. But you don't have to be a terrible person about it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
just be better.
Okay.
Be better, everyone. Be best.
Don't look. Be best, honey. Your go ahead.
I don't know what I was going to say.
I was going to say, your president's wife told you to be best. I was going to say, as
the First Lady of the United States tells us all, don't be best, which means don't do opioids. There's three pillars and I forget. Don't cyberbully. Don't abuse opioids. And there's a third one that has nothing to do with the other two either.
It's depressing. It's so depressing. And I know we are. I don't really want to go down a political rabbit hole, but I was having this conversation with somebody this week. I was just saying how, like, yes, you know, I'm grateful that we are only a year out from, you know, really a year and a few months out until, you know, the 2020 primaries. But there's still a part of me that is just, you know how you, so how do I say, you've traveled, right? You travel almost as much as I do, if not. But the idea of, like, you know, that feeling of when you're just like, I didn't really go anywhere, but I'm exhausted. Mm. That's how I feel about everything when it comes to politics these days. It's like, it's only been 3 years. And I mean, there have been some really terrible things that have happened. Yeah. And it's been terrible, right? But I'm so exhausted hearing about it. And I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. So I'm just really exhausted. It has been nonstop. And I don't know. I have so many thoughts. And maybe our next episode will be that. Maybe our next episode will be where we will dive into the politics and the political scope of things. I'll have Kevin hold us to that because I tend to forget our topic sometimes. So, but overall, yeah, it's exhausting. So with that being said, I wanted to move on. So I wanted to, if it's okay, Kev, wanted to say, we're getting ready to move into graduation season. Oh, yeah. And I know sometimes we don't always get people who want to ask us questions, but we do get people who, it's surprising. It's actually very surprising how many people. I went to a school this week, and about four or five of the kids were like, your homecoming episode was amazing. And I'm like, oh, shit, y'all listen to the podcast. So it's always really cool to know that, you know, between the two of us, we're creating a movement, per se, behind our podcast. And we're thankful for everybody who comes. And we do recognize that not everybody always has a question or wants to ask us a question. So I wanted to create space and just throw out that, you know, you can email us at asklearnt@gmail.com if you want to shout out someone graduating or someone getting a certificate, or if somebody got, you know, their degree in, you know, underwater basket weaving. Like, if that's what someone has done, feel free to shout them out. We'll put the email in the description box for people, and I'll continue to promote it on social. But I did this week. I don't know if you have anybody you want to shout out, but there are three people I wanted to shout out this week, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So wanted to shout out Doctor. These are all people who have gotten their doctorates. And I can say this is someone who 3 years ago defended mine and went through hell to get there. I just felt the need because I saw them come across my timeline this week. And I was like, I wanted to shout them out before it was too late. But Dr. Este Hernandez, wanted to send them love and say congratulations on defending your dissertation. Dr. Brittany M. Williams, who I have worked with and have known for actually quite some time. I've known Brittany for maybe I would say about a good 3 or 4 years, and I watched them go through their program. I know for a fact. So I'll go back a little bit. Dr. Hernandez focused on the Latinx experience and their dissertation, and that's why I wanted to shout them out because, again, not only is the doctorate story or the doctorate journey hard, but ultimately when you are doing it about a marginalized group, it becomes even more complicated. And so because we are all about learning here, and we are all about talking about the complicities that come into doing this work, the complexities and complicities that come with it. I just wanted to shout them out for doing the work that they're doing. So Brittany, same thing. Dr. Williams did the same thing with theirs. Their story, they looked at the experiences of women of color. And I think I'm going to also shout out Dr. Jen Jackson for doing the same thing. They also have done a study that focuses on Black experiences and folks in the inner city. I think somewhere around Chicago. I think they live in Chicago, and they've done some really cool work around that. So I know I went back and forth a lot between the three of them, but Dr. Hernandez, Dr. Williams, and Dr. Jackson, we speak your name. So just wanted to do that. Cool. All right.
You've got some some stuff to...
Peace.
You've got some...
Shit, girl. So I want to say this because it may seem like we're kind of off. Because we are recording early and because it's a little late, we're both a little tired. So we're trying to push through the episode. But we do it because we love y'all. But yes, I do have a few peeves. They're very simple and very childish. So I'll go this week. One of the peeves that I have. So... Kevin, you don't have... Do you have a car?
Yeah, I do.
Do you have a car? Okay, you do. Do you drive around New York a lot?
As much as I can help it, but sometimes, yeah, sometimes.
Okay, so one of the things that I have noticed that really gets under my skin, I tend to not be a road rage driver here in California. I can tend to keep my cool pretty much most of the time when I'm like driving, I'm usually really cool behind the wheel. But the one thing that I have noticed as of late that has really been really getting under my skin is people who do not signal. It really, really bugs me. And I don't know why it drives me to no end, but it's like, honey, your hand is literally on the steering wheel, and it takes 2 seconds to hit the little signal thing that you need to see. I don't know what it's called, blinker, signal, whatever you want to call. It takes 2 seconds. And the whole thing about it that really bugs me is that once you hit the little thing that signals or blinks, when you move over into the lane and you correct your wheel, it goes off. You don't even need to touch it more than once.
It's like driver's ed.
Once. You don't even need to. It's not like you have to hit it once and then hit it again for it to go off. Sometimes it will stay on. Yes, we all know that. But I just don't comprehend why people don't use their signal. So that's me, like, in my soul and in my spirit. If you want to talk about what really makes my blood boil, is when I am on the road and I am looking. And that's the other thing too. I drive an SUV, so it makes it very difficult at times for me to see, like, cars that are lower, especially if you're in my blind spot. And my car will beep and will tell me, like, oh girl, there's somebody in your blind spot. But most of the time, it's like, if you're just gonna get into the lane that I'm in and you don't signal, my car won't pick up that you're signaling. And so there could be a chance that I will hit you. And that's the thing, I signal. Yeah. So it really bugs me, if you can't tell already. So that's that on that. The other thing, and it relates, I know every week y'all are going to get so tired of hearing me talk about my travel woes. But I wanted to talk a little bit about people who sit in the middle seat of a plane. If you are uncomfortable, then that means you need to book earlier than what you're booking. It is not my responsibility as somebody who knows they are chubby and sits at the edge of a seat to make you comfortable because you are in the middle seat. That's really all I have with that. Like, I'm not going to go into too much detail around that. It just frustrates me that people in the middle seat will swear for God that it is my problem that they are uncomfortable in the middle seat. And it's like, girl, when you booked your flight, you knew that you were going to be in the middle. You could have paid a little bit more to sit on the edge, or you could have booked a different flight. It's not my problem. So I just wanted to say that if you book a middle seat and you're uncomfortable, that's your bad. It's not mine.
What about middle seat people that take up, like, that put their arms out and take up both sides of the armrest so that nobody on either side of them can get any armrest? That drives me crazy.
Girl, that happened on my Delta flight. I have my friends who know and love me. I went off about it when I got back this past week, but I ultimately was literally. So this is a long story short, Kevin. I'm flying to New York on Delta. It's a red eye. This man literally gets in the middle seat, and what? It wasn't bad that he kept moving. I understand people fidget because, you know, maybe you have a neurotic issue, or maybe, you know, you're trying to make yourself comfortable on a plane. I get it. Flying is not comfortable for everybody. So I don't want to come across as elitist when I say this. However, this man swore for God that both of the armrests was his for him to sleep on. And I had to politely tap him and let him know, like, girl, you can't take up all the space because you're uncomfortable. And that's where my pet peeve this week comes from, is this idea that this man, specifically what I would assume to be a cisgender male, assumed that he could man spread and take up all the space. From here on out, for the rest of the year, I'm calling people out on planes. Like, if y'all hear of a plane landing somewhere it's not supposed to land, it's probably because I went off and the plane had to land. But I'm sick of it. I'm just, with as much as I fly, I think my energy for flying is low because I'm just sick of the BS that people pull on planes. There's a lot of, I could get into that if I really wanted to, about how awful people are when they fly. But that is one of my biggest pet peeves. Both of the armrests are not yours. The space is not yours. And if you are uncomfortable in a middle seat, book earlier. Shit. So, yeah. Any pet peeves for you this week?
No, nothing comes to mind other than my usual annoyances with people on a daily basis.
Mm-mm. I will also have one more, and then we will end the show. I was also going to say, if you please, can you please stop following and unfollowing me on social media? That is really getting under my skin at this point now. I'm starting to notice that there are quite a few people who do it. And I see you. I see it. That's the thing. Like, I have 10,300 followers. Okay. Yes, fine. I'll throw that out there. And it sometimes makes it very complicated for me to really know who's adding me. However, there are people, and I don't know if you can attest to this, but there are people who I see every other day who will add me and wait for me to add them back and then unfollow me and do it again. And there have been times where I've even added them just so they would stop, and they ultimately will unfollow me again. And I'm like, okay, if you do it, I'm blocking you, period. Automatic block.
Okay.
That's it. That's really it. I'm just in this place of just people this week have really, I'm usually the love and the joy of, I feel like I'm the one that brings all of the glitter to the show. Like, Kevin's like, you know, I got some glitter, but I'm going to go ahead and throw a couple of pieces of glass too. I'm like, okay, yes. Kevin, I'm here. I feel it because I want to throw glass too. True. But I usually tend to be like, yay, everybody, everything is joyful. Everything is love. Shit, not this week. This week, people have gotten on my goddamn nerves. Just, I can't. Oh, the ghetto. I don't know what it is. Are we in Mercury retrograde?
I don't know. I feel like someone always says that it's Mercury retrograde no matter what time of the year it is. So I never understand.
Well, I'll chop it up to that. We're in Mercury retrograde.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's really all I got this week. So I'll have joy for you next week. But this week, people are a lot. So, okay, cool. Well, Boo, do you have any announcements or things you have coming up? Do you want folks to know about?
Still nothing to really announce. There's some pieces coming up for Bust and Lit Hub and stuff with the book, but I don't know I don't know when anything's coming out yet. I've written it all, but yeah. I'm just waiting to hear.
Same. I feel the same way. I have a couple of pieces, MTV News. I have a piece for Sorbet. And then I have a couple of other pieces coming out for Pride Month that I'll be writing and things. But yeah, I feel you right there with you. I don't know when they'll come out, but they will when they do. And we thank, I don't know, for one reader to the next, I'm sure one writer to the next. We're so thankful for the folks who read and share our stuff. I've had some really cool people, reach out and say, oh, so-and-so, I've shared your article with so-and-so and things. And so it's really cool to know that, between both of us, we're writing content that's being shared in a way to really help people learn and things. So thank you for sharing our shit. Thank you for reading it. Thank you for actually reading, because people don't read. But thank you for reading it. And thank you for supporting us here over at, at Learnt. We are so grateful and thankful for all of it. That's how tired I really am.
It's okay.
But other than that, we love you and we will catch you on the next episode. So thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.